Well, that was lovely, Richard. Thank you so much. And we're bringing one of Ivan's oldest and dearest friends to the podium, Randy Packard. Randy is also the William H. Welch Professor and Chair of the History of Medicine at Johns Hopkins University. Randy?
Thank you. I would say it's a pleasure to be here, but obviously it's obviously mixed feelings. I must say, having it here and walking in about an hour ago and walking down these halls and this amazing exhibit here on survival, I realize that I cannot walk through a museum without seeing it differently because of Ivan. That Ivan taught many of us to read exhibits in ways we'd never thought of. So I'm the old friend, emphasis on old, and I'm going to tell some stories. Some of them are Ivan stories that you probably heard, and of course no one tells Ivan stories better than Ivan, but they're always worth repeating. So my mouth was burning. I was sitting in the stone and thatched hut with Patty and Ivan in Amakura in 1969. I was with my wife, and we were in the Peace Corps in Uganda, just over the border outside of Tororo. Ivan was doing his dissertation research, and Ivan had cooked a curry. And I was grasping for the beer to wash it down because it was very hot. And he looked at me quizzically, and I said, "Spicy." And he looked at me, "Spicy? Eh, you want spicy? That's when your body sweats and you get a pain in the back of your head." That was his first piece of culinary advice that he gave me over the years. I first met Ivan several weeks before when Prudy and I went to the Toro Club, and Patty and Ivan were there, and Ivan was sunbathing in his bathing suit, even then an impressive sight. He would be reading and then floating in the pool, but every once in a while he'd get up and sort of run toward the perimeter, waving his hands and yelling. And I didn't know what to make of it, and I didn't know who he was. We eventually talked, and I realized that what he was doing was actually making sure that the baboons that lived on Toro Rock didn't invade the pool, which they thought was their natural watering hole. He believed that if he did this about every half an hour, it kept them away. And I thought about this, and I've always wondered whether the baboons really wanted to get to the water hole or they really liked the entertainment. So over the next 40 years, Ivan and I shared many meals together, from the best Chinese restaurant in Hamilton, New York, after which Ivan said, "I'm stuffed, let's go for a ride," to extravagant dinners following SRC meetings in New York, to his guided tour of Chinese, Thai, and Vietnamese restaurants with Corey and my second wife, Carolyn, in Cambodia outside Atlanta, and finally to the quest for the perfect breakfast burrito in Santa Fe. Ivan was always a critic and teacher about food, and it's hard to remember any conversation we had that didn't involve food, that some discussion of a restaurant, his latest find, and how exquisite the food was. And so there was lots of discussion of food. And he was also, he liked fine spirits, as I found out one evening after an SSRC meeting here in Washington, when we went to the Willard Hotel for an after dinner drink. Ivan was feeling quite full of himself that night, and we got into the Willard, and we sat down in their stuffed chairs, and Ivan saw the waiter came by, and he said, "Waiter, bring me your best glass of cognac," as Ivan only could say, right? So the waiter scurried off, and he came back, and he said that, "Yes, sir, we have this fine cognac, a 50-year-old Louis XIII cognac." And he looked at it, and he smiled, and said, "Sounds good, I'll try that." And the waiter sort of leaned over and said, "That's $250 a glass." And Ivan said, "I'll try the second most expensive." He finally settled on a $30 glass of cognac after. So that night in Amakura in 1969, Ivan also introduced me to anthropology. Not just any anthropology, but his beloved British social anthropology, the Meyer Fortas, Max Gluckman, Evans Pritchard social anthropology. And of course, with Ivan, you don't hear about anthropology without having stories about the famous founders and participants in the field and Ivan's encounters with them. And of course, my favorite that many of you have heard was his visit to the famous Max Gluckman in Manchester. Ivan traveled to Manchester on the train, and all the way up there, he was worrying about how he was going to greet him, what he was going to say as an introduction. He was just a young graduate student going off to do his fieldwork, and here he was meeting the famous Max Gluckman. So the train pulls into Manchester Central Station, and he gets to the door, and he waits for it to open. The door doesn't open. He's waiting. He sees Gluckman on the platform pacing back and forth. He can't wait to get out. The door doesn't open. Well, this is a train where you actually had to manually open the doors, right? Ivan didn't know that. The train starts pulling out. Ivan starts to panic. He's pounding on the glass doors. And looking as he looks out, he sees Gluckman looking at his watch angrily, disappearing into the distance. He finally got back and met Gluckman, but it was... So that evening, its introduction to British medical, to British anthropology, was also the beginning of an academic mentorship that also lasted for the next 40 years. For whatever reason, Ivan decided to take me under his wing at that point. And later on, when I began my dissertation, he became my advisor, my academic godfather. He helped me, and as he's helped many others, with writing proposals, reading chapters, writing letters. He introduced me to people at conferences, and he always met people with Ivan because you couldn't go from point A to point B without stopping 30 times to meet somebody along the way. So he met lots of people, and he was very generous about that. And he invited me for my first job talk when he was at Colgate. And he made sure that my first book found a home at Indiana in his series. And I believe that he also played a central role in having me chosen to serve on the SSRC committee, Africa committee. When he came to Emory, he helped me develop programs and train graduate students. He was always ready to read our work and advise us. Most of all, he has, as you all know, this amazing bibliographic memory. And there's always citations for almost anything you can imagine. Now, Ivan had a great fondness for the classics, and he's very critical of people who haven't read the classics, but he never was a sort of intellectual curmudgeon. He was always on the edge. He was telling me what was on the next wave in history before I had any clue that that was on the next wave of history. And it was true with other areas and disciplines as well. Ivan's advice, of course, wasn't limited to academics. He liked to share information about stocks and bonds. And of course, about how well his own portfolio was doing. He's the only person I knew who could tell you his net worth at any moment in time. He often said that I was his barometer for investments. He said, when Packard starts to invest, I better start selling. He probably was right, but I wasn't the ultimate barometer. That honor went to Tom Beidleman, of whom Ivan often said, when Tom invests, it's time to get completely out of the market. Ivan was also fond of giving advice through very pithy sayings, like no deed goes unpunished, which he felt many times. And in response to my quandaries about whether I should apply for this job or that job, he said, I never turn down a job I haven't been offered. Some of my favorites, some of his favorite quotations came from Marx, Groucho, not Karl. And one of these was, I wouldn't want to belong to any club that would have me as a member. Oddly, that pretty much summed up Ivan's attitude toward every institution that ever hired him. I know Ivan could be a polarizing figure. I often had to deal with colleagues at Emory who found him difficult to get along with. Yet Ivan was my friend, my dear friend. But more than that, and I know it's a cliche, but for the first 20 years of my career, and probably longer, he was the wind beneath my wings. My father died in 1995, and I told people that I felt like I had lost my moral compass. When Ivan died, I lost a friend and a large part of my intellectual compass. Now, except for the years when we were together at Emory, our friendship was maintained over long distances. We communicated with letters, phone calls, and recently the internet. He never got onto tweeting, as far as I know, at least not with me. It is perhaps because of this long-distance nature of our relationship, that it has been so hard for me to come to terms with his passing. It is difficult to imagine that he's not still out there somewhere, ready to provide citation, tell his stories, review his latest favorite restaurant, complain about his health or his colleagues, give stock tips, and lead me where I need to be led. And I suppose this is because, for me, he still is out there and always will be. I love you, Ivan.